weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to Roz, Emma and Graeme for driving us through the afternoon. It is Thursday, February 6th, and I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm here on 2FM, Bernard Jackman previews the weekend's Six Nations action, and we'll hear from Dan Sheehan ahead of Ireland's trip to Scotland. We have our eye on America in the company of Jeff Shepherd with Super Bowl 59 right around the corner. Plus, we'll cross live the Fergal Brennan at Anfield as Liverpool look to overturn a League Cup semi-final deficit. And we'll keep you up to date with Ireland women's basketball Euro qualifier against France, as well as rounding up the rest of today's sports news headlines. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or join the conversation on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On.
Check out the podcast on the RTE Radio Player app.
Good evening, listeners. Welcome along to the show. Good evening, Bernard Jackman. How are you, sir?
Very good, thank you.
Looking forward to a weekend of Six Nations action. You're off to Scotland?
Off to Scotland tomorrow, just to make sure I don't miss out on Sunday. No travel delays. I'm looking forward to getting over there and watching the other two games on Saturday. Obviously, France and England is a big game in terms of the championship, and because France look like they're hot at the moment, and obviously then the wooden spoon decider over in Rome. Two very important clashes.
We will dive into all of that very shortly. We have team news in from Wales, from France, from England, lots to get through, and we will get your thoughts, of course, on Scotland against Ireland. Some news headlines, and sure, we may as well start with rugby, considering you're sitting across me, Bernard. Joe Schmidt will leave his post as Australia head coach in October following the conclusion of the Rugby Championship. Schmidt, who assumed the role in the wake of the Wallabies' disastrous 2023 World Cup campaign, will remain in charge for the upcoming Lions tour in the summer and the subsequent 2025 Rugby Championship, but will depart in advance of the November series. Australian rugby's head of the high performance, Peter Horn, who will lead the search for a successor, said that Schmidt was looking to spend more time at home with his family. We are delighted Joe will continue to coach the Wallabies beyond his current contract. After noting the positive impact Joe has made with the Wallabies playing and coaching staff, we were keen that he stay on after the Lions series. So he stayed on for longer than his initial contract. Will it be looked or viewed as a positive?
Oh, 100%. The only thing is it may take a little bit from the Lions tour. Sometimes when a coach has already publicly declared that they're not staying around long term, that can affect performance. But knowing Joe, it won't be down to a lack of effort or detail from him. He answered an SOS. If you remember, like he was part of the All Blacks team that nearly won a World Cup. Part of their coaching staff, obviously, had taken a break from day to day coaching for a little while. Went working for World Rugby, got back into it to try and win a World Cup with the All Blacks. And then Australia was on its knees, and Eddie Jones was obviously caught flirting with Japan. He ended up going to Japan, and they couldn't have got a better man because he's actually made a big improvement in a short space of time and has them looking like they're going to be competitive in this Lions series. But obviously now they need to look at what's going to happen post him.
Okay, well, we wish Joe Schmidt all the very best. He probably will remain in that part of the world. We won't be touting him for a Munster gig or anything like that.
Look, I genuinely think there is family reasons why he needs to step away. And he could have any job he wanted in the Northern Hemisphere. But I'd imagine he'll take a bit of a break now and just try and get some balance back in his life.
Okay. You mentioned Eddie Jones. I see Eddie Jones coaching the Scarlets.
He went in to do a guest session. He's over here for ITV.
Right.
Very funny, he was on TV on Saturday and they tried to grill him about some of the comments in his autobiography. And he said, "Don't believe everything you read, mate." And they were like, "But Eddie, it's your autobiography." Eddie Jones got Eddie Jones. So he wasn't great on TV. So hopefully he's a bit better this week.
Hopefully. Other rugby news. Munster's recruitment for next season has continued with the signing of Irish qualified centre Dan Kelly from Leicester Tigers. The 23-year-old will join on a 2-year contract at the end of the season. Born in Manchester, Kelly is a former Ireland under 20 international, qualifying through his Irish born grandparents, while he has also earned one England cap. Although he has been included in an England training squad as recently as 2023, Kelly became Irish qualified again in the summer of 2024 after satisfying World Rugby's 3-year stand-down period to switch national allegiance.
So it's complicated for people who aren't close to this, but it's the same rule that allowed John Klein play for South Africa in the World Cup. Obviously, you haven't played for Ireland in the last World Cup. If you haven't been picked by the country you've been capped for a period of 3 years, and you have a legitimate reason why you qualify for another country. So he played under 20s for Ireland, obviously. Eddie Jones gave him a cap, actually, speaking of Eddie Jones, okay, to kind of tie him down when he's playing for Leicester, but he never really kicked on in that system. And it's a good sign for Munster. He plays a lot of rugby on a weekly basis for Leicester in the Premiership. So you're getting an Irish qualified centre who's a good age profile. He's about 24, I think.
Yeah.
And again, he's potentially there. If you look at our centres, Gary Ringrose, Bundy Aki, Robbie Henshaw, you know, they're all fairly experienced, and we're not writing them off by any manner of means, but certainly someone of his profile who's got a lot of experience already is going to add to the depth.
Okay. Where's the ceiling? More likely than not, he will feature in an Ireland jersey in the near future.
You would say
so,
yeah, if he continues to kick on. I mean, he's got loads. He was physically very well developed at 20.
Okay.
And now it's just the other parts of his game, I think, that he just needs to add a few layers to. But look at the way Munster play is very similar to how Ireland play, and he could be a very useful addition.
Okay, he played alongside Jack Crowley and Tom Ahern.
That's right, Jack,
with the
20s team.
With the under 20, so he's well used to the Munster boys. Okay, so we wish Dan Kelly all the very best with that move to Munster. Bernie, you can down tools for a wee bit. We're going to rattle through the rest of today's news headlines, chat super well, and then return back to a big Six Nations preview a little later in the show. And we will hear from Dan Sheehan, as well as Scotland scrum coach Peter de Villiers. Elsewhere, the Republic of Ireland under 21s have been drawn against England, Slovakia, Kazakhstan, Moldova and Andorra in their 2027 UEFA European under 21 championship qualifying group. The FAI have stated that fixtures for the games are yet to be confirmed and will be announced in due course. Three-time Euro under 21 winners England, currently managed of course by Lee Carsey, certainly the pick of the matches there. In cricket, Ireland pulled off a remarkable comeback to post a respectable score on the opening day of the only test against Zimbabwe in Bulawayo. After they were reduced to 31 for 5, the visitors managed to post 260 in their first innings. Ireland's innings found stability in the impressive counter-attack led by Mark Adair and Andy McBrien. The pair stitched a critical 127 run partnership for the 7th wicket, lifting Ireland from a precarious position. In response, Zimbabwe ended the day on 72 for 1, 188 runs behind the Irish score. Sticking with cricket, Ireland's Amy Maguire has been suspended from bowling in international cricket with immediate effect after an independent assessment confirmed that the left arm spinner uses an illegal bowling action. The 18-year-old was reported by match officials for a suspect bowling action during the first ODI of the ICC Women's Championship Series against India in January. In response to that news, Cricket Ireland have confirmed that they will action a remedial programme for Maguire that will be led by National Women's Spin Bowling coach James Cameron Dow. And some serious news actually in racing at Thurles. The meet at Thurles was abandoned this afternoon due to an injury sustained by jockey Michael O'Sullivan in a final fence fall. O'Sullivan was riding Wee Charlie in the second race of the card for Gerard O'Leary and was one of three fallers at the last in the 2 mile Racing Again February 20th handicap chase, with two other horses badly hampered and unseating their riders. The jockey was treated on the track and was brought to hospital in Cork by air ambulance. Racing was initially deferred before being called off around 3:30 this afternoon. So we wish jockey Michael O'Sullivan all the very best, and hopefully it is not too serious, those injuries. In basketball, the Irish women's basketball team will be on the court very, very shortly, in just, 4 minutes' time, in their 2025 Eurobasket qualifier against France. Ireland currently sit bottom of Group B with 4 defeats from 4 matches. Tip-off against the Olympic silver medalist in Chalon-sur-Saône is at 6:15. We can hear from the Ireland camp now. Head coach James Weldon and captain Edel Thornton were speaking to reporter Orla Keeling.
It's a great opportunity for, you know, the players and the staff to play such a high caliber team. You know, with the changes to FIBA for the next qualifying campaign, your likelihood is you're not going to get a game against France or Spain or whatever. Like, you know, so we have to kind of make the most of the moment and enjoy it. I think the game in the arena, 2 years ago now, I guess almost, it was a great kind of first quarter, and, you know, 2 or 3 minutes into the quarter was still kind of, our second quarter was kind of like a 2 or 3 point game. So, you know, look, we'd be kind of setting ourselves achievable goals to try and stay in the game a tiny bit longer this time round. And look, overall, I suppose we're kind of looking at the Thursday game to kind of get us ready for Sunday and, you know, give it a good go on Sunday, you know.
What's it like for a country like Ireland coming up against the Olympic silver medalists in France? Like, what an opportunity.
It's just a huge opportunity for us. Like, and, you know, a few years ago, we weren't even anywhere near this. We were in small countries, and now we're playing against the second team in the world, really. It's incredible, and, you know, we're aware of that, and we're not naive of their stature, but we're also ready to go and, you know, disrupt them as much as we can.
And what's it like for this team going forward? You know, I'm looking at the likes of Brona Paracasti, who's available hopefully for the next window, Enya Maguire, then you've got other girls coming in for the next couple of years, Ella O'Donnell, who's played for this team, Laura Bello. What does this team look like in the next couple of years?
I just think we're just going to continue to get better and better, to be honest. And I think, like, the Irish girls in the league at home are rising our standards as best as we can, and, you know, picking everyone up with us and trying to go as hard as we can, and, you know, having the girls come in that are playing in Spain, and, you know, Claire and Bridget, and bringing their experience into the team has been great this week. But I think, you know, watching what's coming, like what we have to come, I'm so excited. Like, I think about it some days and I'm like, okay, this could be really, really special, and, you know, if I can be a part of it for just a small little bit longer, I'll be really excited. But yeah, I'm sure we're just going to get better as we go.
Okay, we'll keep you up to date with that one. France against Ireland, as I say, in just under a minute time. That one tips off. Finally, before we take a break, the GAA Director, General Tom Ryan, writing in his annual report, has acknowledged that the All-Ireland Finals may be moved back to August from 2026. The GAA has reported a 19% rise in revenue for 2024, with a bumper year for Croke Park driving much of the increase. This was despite a 10% decrease in match day attendances in 2024. RT Sport reporter Conor Neville has full details of that financial report on the RT Sport website. We're taking a short break, then we're turning our attention to American football and indeed some big news in the world of the NBA. Stick with us here in Game On.
Game On.
Eye on America.
Well, our eye is on America. It is Super Bowl week. There's some big basketball news, so only one place to go to, and that is to Jeff Shepherd, live from New Orleans. Shep, happy Super Bowl week to you, sir.
Happy Super Bowl week to you too, Shane. How you doing, man?
I'm very well. I'm very well. Are you excited?
Yes, yes. You know, as you mentioned, it's been an odd week this week, you know. It's been a quiet week on the football front. You know, no players, knock on wood so far, have gone out and done anything stupid to get arrested or, you know, taken the headlines or done anything like that. You know, all of the big news was last weekend with the Luka Doncic trade. But, yeah, I mean, look, what I think happens is these two franchises, really, in the last decade, you know, they've both played multiple Super Bowls, so and played against each other. So, you know, they know what to expect. You know, they know it's a business trip. It's not, you know, just a party or anything like that, even though it's in New Orleans. Yeah, so, I mean, I think, you know, the Chiefs have a chance to make history here with the three-peat, and, you know, the Eagles certainly want to upend that history. They don't want to be on the losing end of this game.
Absolutely. Listen, before we get stuck into the Super Bowl and preview it in detail, you mentioned the small matter of that Luka Doncic blockbuster trade. Before we get your thoughts, actually, we can hear some audio of Doncic on LeBron and LeBron on Doncic.
We haven't heard from you yet. What have the last few days been like for you as the team trades away Anthony Davis and others for Luka?
It's been a whirlwind, so I can only imagine, or I can't even imagine, how Luka and AD and Max Christie and Maxi Kleber, and obviously Hood Schifino was one of our teammates as well. So it's been challenging for sure, you know, especially for me. You know, anytime I had 6 years with AD, win a championship with my guy, obviously one of my best friends, obviously. So, you know, it's a business, and you understand that. You know, it's a business of basketball. We understand that, and I know he's going to do well down there in Dallas.
You add the man who is third all-time in points per game in NBA history in Luka. I know your brain doesn't ever stop thinking about basketball. What are your initial thoughts on what this team could look like with you and Luka at the head of the snake?
It's going to be special. I think so. You know, we're going to attract a lot of eyes. Obviously, our ability to score, rebound, pass, is going to make it a lot easier on our teammates. And that's all we want to do. We want to be able to create opportunities for our teammates where they only have to catch, finish, catch, dunk, catch, shoot. And it's our job to lead them every single night. Listen, Luka's a big-time player, 25 years old, haven't even reached his prime yet, and he's done some amazing shit in our league already. I'm happy to have him. LA's happy to have him. And it's still a little bit surreal, honestly, to be honest.
You've been a fan of LeBron. You've talked about it for a long time, but he's also been a fan of you. He tried to work with you at various different times in the past, whether it be shoe deals or other things. I'm curious, what message did he reach out to you with? Was it a text? Was it a call? What was that? And how did that fuel the way that you think about coming to LA as well?
Yeah, he called me right away. He was in New York, so he called me right away. And we didn't talk much because, you know, he said, I understand what you're feeling. But that was really nice of him just to call me right away and welcome me to LA.
First of all, impressions of Los Angeles and its fans from afar. And what does this opportunity to, you know, have another love story with LA goes?
Yeah, I would say, like you said, I thought I was going to spend my whole career there because I think loyalty is a big word for me. And I was trying to stay by that. But this for me is a fresh start. I get to play in LA. The fans are amazing. And I got the ocean here. So it's a really big thing for me.
Very important to have the ocean.
Yes.
Just put this into context, right? Just how wild, breathtaking and odd, and how much did this catch you off guard, I suppose?
Sunday morning, I actually sat up in my bed when I looked at my phone and saw, you know, it was all over X, and then went to the ESPN app. And, you know, my wife was like, what's the matter? And I said, this will not mean anything to you in the world, but the Lakers just traded for maybe the best player in the league right now. So, you know, it was just stunning. And, you know, I think the thing that everybody was kind of freaked out about was apparently it had been going on for maybe 2-3 weeks, but just completely under the cover of darkness. The reporter who broke the story that covers the NBA was given like a 1 minute heads up, you know, like there were just, it wasn't that, you know, there was rumors out among, you know, out in the world, there was nothing going on. And all of a sudden it's boom, we're doing this. So, you know, now you put again, you know, one of the top two or three best players in the history of the league, and then one of the top two or three best players in the league right now together with each other. And as LeBron said, they're going to be great together. They're big bodies, and you know, they both can drive and dish. And I mean, they're going to cause problems.
Okay. Bizarre, wild, goo-boo, as we might say over here, Shep. I'll have to explain what that stands for after the show. But yeah, we wish Doncic the very best of luck with that trade. Listen, while we're hearing from some American athletes, let us turn our attention to the Super Bowl, and we can hear from some of the characters involved. From the Eagles, Nick Sirianni and Jalen Hurts, I should say. And from the Chiefs, Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes.
Patrick, a lot of people see you guys as the villain. How do you feel about having everyone have to get you guys like
this? I try not to listen to it too much. I think more than anything, I just try to embrace who we have in this locker room and how we enjoy playing football. And I believe if we play football the right way and we compete, I always have my guys' backs. So we got a lot of good dudes in this locker room, and all we're going to do is compete and try to win football games. Well, for me, I'm pretty good at – I don't really talk trash unless I get trash talked to me. So I'm usually pretty calm. But Coach Reed is great about showing your personality, and we want you to go out there and play with fire, and we want you to show how much you care about the game. That's why it's just genuine. You're just honest, and you respect the guys on the other side of the football. When you're in between the lines, you show your fire, you show your love for the game. But when you're off the field, you show respect for the game. And I think that's important. And I think that's why we're in the position that we're in.
You know, my first Super Bowl ever, I really, I got caught into the hype. It's easy to get caught into the hype. All the cameras, all the lights. It's the biggest game of your life, and the entire world is going to watch it. And that can take away from your ability to just go out there and play the game that you've loved since you were a little kid. So it's the biggest lesson I've learned is don't let the hype get to you. Don't let the magnitude of the game around you get to you. At the end of the day, this is a, you know, you got here for a reason. Your team got here for a reason. So lean on them and don't let the moment be too big for you.
So reflecting on the 2022 loss against the Chiefs, you're back now against the Chiefs. I want to know, is there a different mindset approaching this game?
I think the approach is always to go out there and find a way to win. It's always been the approach. And, you know, when you have an opponent like that, when you're playing them, you give them the utmost respect. But you want to make it about what you do and go out there and just execute.
Hey, Coach, the Eagles are the first team since the 92-93 Dallas Cowboys to enter this game with the top-ranked defense and a rushing game to post over 2,000 yards. Is there any added pressure with such an elite defense and a strong rushing attack to win this game?
Shoot, there's always pressure in this game. Like, have you been to Philly? You know, I tell a story sometimes about one of my first games there as the head coach, and we're in a preseason game, and they were booing at halftime. And I kind of remember getting in the car. So my wife adapted very quickly to Philly because I got in the car. And I'm like, could you believe that? They were booing us at halftime of a second preseason game. It was against the Patriots. And she said, well, what'd you give them to cheer about? And I was like, you know, that was fair. And so, you know, there's pressure in all professional sports. You know, we're used to that. We're built for it. And so what we need to do is control the things like we can't control, you know, with the outside noise or anything like that. And we, all we can control is our habits. And that's what we'll try to do this week to try to put ourselves in position to succeed this weekend.
So the Chiefs against the Eagles, Sunday night, the Chiefs chasing, as you mentioned, Shep, that historic three-peat. However, am I right in saying that they've somewhat emerged as the team that people just love to hate?
You know, Shane, it's interesting listening to that. I was thinking back, you know, we've talked before about, you know, I've been doing this now for, I don't know, 10, 15 years close. For the first decade I was doing this in Ireland, it was the Patriots. It was everybody was just, you know, the Patriots were the team. You hated them. You respected them because they would find a way to pull it out, you know, in most of the Super Bowls that they were in. But, you know, they were, you know, Deflategate and Spygate and all this other stuff that was going on that kind of gave you a reason to hate him. And, you know, Belichick's a curmudgeon and all this other stuff. The Chiefs are just like these nice guys from the Midwest and, oh, yes, ma'am, yes, sir, let me hold the door open for you, you know? And, but it's kind of like they've just, it's almost like you just kind of hate them because you have to respect them. There's nothing else you can really do. I mean, I've said it, we've talked about it this year on the show, Shane. They didn't have a great year, yet they only lost two games, and one of them was they sat all their starters. They still only got beat once the entire season. And it's like, I mean, you know, if they're going to win the Super Bowl this year on a team that's just, you know, historically not one of their better teams, but still manages to go, you know, 15-2 in the regular season, what's ever going to stop these guys? And, you know, Mahomes is, you know, looking to, he's chasing down Tom Brady. And I mean, the echelon of quarterbacks he's going to move into, you know, with this many Super Bowls, you know, it's just, it's stunning. And so it's kind of like, yes, I think everybody respects them, but there's some people who feel like, you know, they get calls that, you know, most teams wouldn't normally get, but that's what happens when you're the best team in the league. It just, it is what happens. The Cowboys used to get them. The 49ers used to get them. The Patriots got them for a long time. And now it's the Chiefs, the recipients of it.
We heard from Patrick Mahomes there and Jalen Hurts, who of course are both pivotal to their respective team's success. Like, how do their individual playing styles differ and what challenges might each defense face in trying to contain these guys?
Yeah, so, you know, Hurts is more of a running quarterback. You know, he will quickly tuck the ball and take off and pick up 10, 15 yards. You know, Mahomes is definitely going to sit in the pocket a little bit longer. It's not that he can't run. It's just that he usually chooses to kind of stick around and he'll try to get the ball to Kelce or, you know, Xavier Worthy or some of these other receivers that he has. You know, the main big giant difference between the two of them is you can kind of see with the quarterback sneak, especially down by the goal line. You know, Mahomes ran for a touchdown in the AFC Championship game, but he hasn't really done that a ton this year. And of course, with the Eagles, you've got the tush push or the brotherly shove, as they call it, where, you know, they line up behind Jalen Hurts and just kind of almost, you know, catapult him into the end zone behind the offensive line. That is, quite honestly, it's the most effective play in professional football right now. And so that's kind of the two biggest differences. It's really their ability to get out and run. Again, Mahomes can do it. He just doesn't do it as much as Jalen Hurts does.
Okay. And when you look at the matchups, really, but in terms of tactics, is this going to kind of just boil down to an individual area where there's a kind of focus on a particular battle?
Well, I think, you know, first and foremost, and it's, you know, the biggest cliche that's out there, but it's about turnovers. I mean, that has been like the crucial, you know, the most important stat so far in the postseason. It's the teams that are winning the turnover battles or winning the football games, like first and foremost. And that's usually always been the case, but it's been, you know, completely true this year. I think that if the Kansas City, you know, secondary can somehow try to slow down the big receivers that the Eagles have, that will kind of change their pace. But then if that happens, Shane, oh, then I guess we'll just rely on Saquon Barkley, who ran for, you know, 2,000 plus yards so far this year, you know? So, I mean, it's kind of an embarrassment of riches. And, you know, I listening to Sirianni talk, you know, he has had a whirlwind season this year. I mean, he's getting booed. You know, he's had to apologize to fans for saying things about them. You know, they were, quote unquote, you know, struggling during the middle of the season. And now here they are, you know, on the cusp of a Super Bowl. You know, they've been the best team in the NFC. You know, we were, you know, the Lions obviously is who we were thinking, you know, was going to be there. And then they get upset. And then you turn around and it's the Eagles as the two seed. And you're like, you know, that team has been pretty good the entire season. You know, they just maybe aren't as flashy as the Lions had been with their offense, but they were pretty good all year long.
Might be as flashy, but it's fair to say we've seen somewhat of an evolution. Like, how much is that down to Barkley and his presence transforming their offensive strategy?
So, I mean, I know there's articles been written about it, but to have a player of his caliber, you know, the Giants to decide they don't want to re-sign him and then they're going to let him go, and then he signs with a divisional foe, is just brutal. You know what I mean? I mean, it is just got to be so terrible. And, you know, he's in his prime. He has just been a phenomenal running back. And, I mean, we have seen him, you know, in each of the playoff games just go 60-plus yards, you know, early on, and it just sets the tone and it changes the pace. The Commanders never really had a chance 2 weeks ago in the NFC Championship game after Saquon went, you know, one play, you know, 60-whatever yards that it was, not to mention that then they started to turn the ball over. So they really, you know, kind of, you know, killed their chances. But, I mean, he just sets the tone so quickly early on. He has incredible speed. I saw it in person in week 3 in New Orleans where he took the game over at the end. And, I mean, it was one move and he is gone and he is untouchable. So, you know, he is going to be one of the biggest factors in this football game.
Okay, well, another massive factor, and there is a celebrity spotlight on him for obvious reasons.
Oh, God. Sure.
Travis Kelce. We don't need to go into that. But from the footballing side of things, like for Travis, how crucial is he, and how crucial is a big performance from Travis to the Chiefs' game plan overall?
So, look, I think part of what the Chiefs did all season long was their game plan of, we're just going to keep him in the garage because we know at the end of the day this is a 3-game season. You know, we're going to get to the playoffs. You know, if we can get the one seed, which they did, we get a bye. We got to win 2 football games at home, and then we go to the Super Bowl. And, you know, he wasn't incredible in the AFC Championship game, but in the week 1 win, or the second playoff round against the Texans, you know, he was phenomenal. And I think, you know, there's a bunch of rumors out there about what is or isn't going to happen in his playing career. You know, his brother just retired at the end of last season. He's got an opportunity, you know, to do the same thing here. He could go out, get a Super Bowl win himself and be in his final game, all aside with everything that's going on with him and his girlfriend. Mm. I mean, it's a Hall of Fame career. You know, he's been the most dominant tight end in the league for the last decade. But look, I mean, they can win without him. But if he is hot and he gets into that rhythm early on, I mean, if Mahomes finds him once or twice on that opening drive and they go down and they score a touchdown, I think they're a completely different team than they are if they kind of struggle out of the gates.
Okay. Obviously, there is a bit of historical context to this. It is a Super Bowl rematch. Do we look much into it? Like, how have the teams evolved since they last met in that big one?
I mean, there's so much roster turnover, Shane. Yeah. It's really hard. But at the key positions, you know, these teams are pretty similar. I don't know exactly how much. It really comes down to more like tendencies with coaching staffs. I think if you ask me, I don't think you can say like, oh, we know this guy likes the, you know, this receiver, you know, likes the ball here, doesn't like it there. There's only so much of that I think you can control. I think a lot of it comes down to these, you know, these coaching staffs. And the Chiefs, you know, with Andy Reid and, you know, Steve Spagnuolo, their defensive coordinator, he's been probably the best coordinator in the league, most consistent best coordinator in the league here, you know, over the last decade, and the results show it.
Mm. You mentioned Andy Reid, and I was reading kind of up on obviously his legacy here, and a 4 championship would place him among the coaching legends if he isn't already there, some might argue. But is his greatest achievement with the Chiefs somewhat just keeping them hungry enough to just keep coming back?
Yeah, I mean, not letting any, you know, lethargic play creep in. And it is challenging. And look, and he was a very good coach when he was with the Eagles. He just couldn't ever get over the hump. And then, you know, he's done it a couple of times here with the Chiefs. And, you know, you mentioned getting to that 4th Super Bowl. He's slowly creeping up the all-time wins, you know, list, where if he stays around 3-4 more years and Patrick Mahomes stays healthy, he could be the winningest coach in NFL history here pretty soon. Mm. Which, you know, he won't probably ever acknowledge publicly, but, you know, all these guys are driven by that stuff. You know what I'm saying? So, no, I mean, he's really good at getting the best out of people. Of course, it helps when you've got a generational quarterback and maybe the greatest tight end of all time, you know? Mm. I mean, you know, that though, it's always good to have really, really good football players if you're a coach, right?
Oh, absolutely. Listen, before we let you go, Shep, the Chiefs are, I think, they're favourites, somewhat slight favourites. Would you agree? Call it for me, Shep.
I mean, I don't know why. I just have this hankering that the Eagles are going to pull it out. Now, the Chiefs are, you know, I think it's like a 1.5-point favorite potentially. You know, which means everybody thinks it's going to be a tight game. I mean, every prediction that I'm seeing is 27-24, 23-20. I don't see anybody thinking that this is going to be some kind of blowout game, you know. I really think it's going to boil down to, you know, who's got the ball at the end of the game. I mean, and look, I say that, and then I've said the same thing over and over again, Shane. I'm not going to bet against Patrick Mahomes until, you know, he falters. And so, I mean, I really think, you know, again, a 1.5-point on the spread in favor of the Chiefs. I mean, I just think it's going to be a great football game, and it's going to be really tight.
Well, here's hoping. Listen, Shep, just before I do let you go, we might have to get you over to Ireland again later in the year, because Croke Park looks set to host Ireland's first NFL game later this year. An announcement is expected tomorrow that we'll see the Pittsburgh Steelers fixture to GAA headquarters. There's speculation that the Steelers will take on the Green Bay Packers in September. I noticed today there is a match that was announced today for Australia, so this could be big news. We might have to get you over, Shep.
Oh, I would love it. You don't even have to worry. I will say yes to whatever flight you want to pay for me, Shane. I'm on it. You just let me know.
We'll have to see, considering we missed the boat not getting over this Sunday for New Orleans. But listen, we won't fall over. We won't fall out over. You're a gentleman. We'll leave the conversation there. Hopefully that match is announced tomorrow for Irish NFL fans to look forward to. A blockbuster fixture in Croke Park, which is a blockbuster fixture this Sunday. For now, Jeff Shepherd, thank you so much. As always, Sunday night, Chiefs against the Eagles should be a cracker. We're taking an ad break, and then we're looking forward to a cracking weekend of rugby with Bernard Jackman.
Game on.
Rugby.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On as we chat rugby. Just to update you with the ongoing Eurobasket qualifier, the Irish women are currently trailing away to France 35-7 at half-time. So they're always going to be up against the Olympic silver medalist France, top of the group. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, Ireland, 4-4. So hopefully a big performance in the third and fourth quarter from the Irish team. Hopefully a big performance from the Irish rugby team on Sunday, Bernard Jackman. Am I right in saying, I was reading this on Twitter, there's a bit of bite to this fixture? Is there a bit of rivalry to this Six Nations?
Yeah, there
fixture?
Is, but the problem is, from a Scottish point of view, Ireland have been pretty dominant for a long time. And I was listening to Tom English, who's a rugby journalist in Scotland, and he was on with a Welsh guest, and Wales are on their knees at the moment. I mean, it's horrific. But Tom English was saying, look, we'd nearly rather be in your situation where you've won a couple of Grand Slams and Six Nations over the last 12 years and have the low. We've kind of been treading water a little bit. And there is big expectations of this team. And Ireland are the only team that have really struggled to match. And they were quite close to Ireland last year, 17-15. In the Viva, the last round. Now, they got a late try, but they really frustrated Ireland for long periods. And they have a load of attacking flair, but that has never come to fruition under Andy Farrell, his reign anyway. And whether Simon Easterby's reign would be any different, on the evidence of last weekend, you would say Ireland are in a pretty good place. There's all this kind of accusations of arrogance, but I actually feel so sorry for the Scots, because, you know, when they're asked, do they believe they can win, they say, yeah, but like, and then it's held against them.
What else you want them to say?
No, 100%. So, yeah. So I actually, you know, over the last couple of years, it's been external people talking them up more so than themselves. But this is the best crop for a long time in Scottish rugby, and there's nothing coming behind it. So there is a lot of pressure on them to achieve, and it should be a fascinating game on Sunday, obviously. Both teams got a win last weekend. Scotland weren't anywhere near their best, but still got a bonus point. Finn Russell had a bit of a shocker. He rarely has that, two games in a row. Obviously Ireland again without Tadhg Furlong, even though we did brilliantly in the scrum at the weekend, is still a question mark. But yeah, it's set up brilliantly for for a big game.
Yeah, I'm going to get your thoughts, and you might predict the starting 15 and obviously the conversation around 10 and a few other positions. But let's hear from Ireland's Dan Sheehan, who was on media duty earlier today.
Dan, congrats on the win, indeed on the comeback, and indeed the try. From your point of view, when I look at your dodgy knee in front of me here, all of the hard work must have been worthwhile when you were standing in the tunnel. waiting to come out onto the pitch last week, to come out onto the pitch to score a try. I mean, that was like all of that hard work rolled into one. Would that be fair enough?
Definitely. It was lovely feeling those sort of pre-game nerves and that pre-game tension in the hotel before the game and that bus journey. All the sort of memories of the previous games come back, and it's obviously something I've massively missed over the last 6 months, is that sort of build up to the big games, and to sort of come off the bench with Jack Onan and have a good impact and hope, like, add my sort of game that I've been thinking about for the last couple of months was definitely a sort of relief in some ways, but also nice to be back.
When I look back in the match and I saw James Law bombing up the wing there, you got the ball, you still had a fair bit of work to do.
I didn't have much to do. I was actually surprised he was going to give it to me. I thought he was going to take I think it was Finn Smith on, but no, that's just the way we've linked up. I've been sort of needing to hang beside him. He's given me 3 assists in the last 2 games, but no, that's just the team we're in. You know, everyone's an option, and I think everyone has their strengths, and Lowy had an exceptional game down the wing and taking on defenders and creating good try scoring opportunities.
You're aware at this stage of how unique the Six Nations Championship is. I mean, it's 5 cup finals effectively. That's it. You've played one, but you've got to do something similar next week in terms of matching the physicality and indeed maybe have a far more rounded 80-minute performance.
Yeah, I think we need to be much better going into the Scotland game. Their motivation be through the roof, much like ours. We've got sort of one up on them in the last couple of times, so we know fully what to expect going into the Sunday game, but we need to focus on making sure we show up from the very beginning and don't sort of tiptoe into the game, and then make sure we have that full 80 minute performance, because we're sort of hit and miss a little bit at times against England, and that can't happen on Sunday.
You've mentioned Sunday twice, being the last game again of the round, given the fact that it's on Sunday, does that make a difference? Do you get a chance to watch the other games, or do you forget about them and concentrate on your own?
No, I'd say it'll be on the team room, the other games, and lads will be sitting around watching it. But no, I don't think it affects us being the last game or anything. If anything, the Sunday game gave us an extra day to recover after the England game, which was a physical battle. So no, I think we'll enjoy the Sunday afternoon game, and knowing that there is a sort of a rest week the week after, we can go full metal jacket and hopefully get a result.
It's an incredible competition, and one that's wide open still. You don't win it in the first round. You certainly don't lose it in the first round. I mean, that's the importance of this one.
Yeah, for sure. And this is a massive game for us to sort of set us up nicely for the rest of the tournament. But we can't look past this game at all. This is a massive game for both teams, and we need to make sure from the get go that we show up, and we show up physically, and we know all their threats. They're a top quality team that, you know, we need to be on our A-game.
And just a final word in terms of the composition of the team, regardless of whether you start or otherwise, you know, you or anybody else, we saw how important the bench was last week and the impact that replacements have to make and the part they have to play.
Yeah, it's been a sort of big trend over the last couple of years of the impact of bench and an 80-minute performance, and it's definitely something that we talk about, is the impact of the bench and not just fitting in but adding an impact. So it's a big part of our game, and if you're in that role, you have a job to do, and it's not about tiptoeing in or letting the standard drop. It's about bringing energy and sort of adding value to the team.
Dan Sheehan speaking to our own Michael Corcoran there. What a return, Bernard, for Dan Sheehan. Like, I mean, how crucial will Dan be? Assuming he starts, how crucial will he be? Not only in set-piece execution, but indeed open play against Scotland.
Yeah, for me, he's probably the best hooker in the world. He was in that discussion before he got injured, and his comeback against the Stormers the week before, he was outstanding for Leinster. He just looks so sharp at the weekend. He just loves playing, and it's great to have him back ahead of time. Obviously, he's worked incredibly hard, and now he's put himself right in the shop window for a Lions tour, providing he can stay fit. I'm not 100% sure if he starts this week. I thought Ronan Keller had a big game as well, and I think you're seeing, you know, Leinster having played around a little bit with players off the bench. Obviously, that's the South African way, and it's led them to a second World Cup, and maybe Ireland will copy that, because even though we had an extra day for this weekend, realistically, it's like a 2-game block, and you know, the starters did a good job. We have to take into account that the game had broken up a little bit when some of our bench players came on, and they executed brilliantly, and they had a huge role. But I wouldn't have an issue with the likes of Conan or Crowley or Dan Sheehan being on the bench again this week, but then obviously a weekend off, they will get effectively 2 weeks to be part of the starting team for the next game. So either way, we're blessed to have two quality hookers in Kelleher and Sheehan in particular.
Yeah. What are the big calls in? Do you think Simon Easby will make many changes, if any?
I don't think he will, to be honest. Obviously, there's a lot of people speculating about the 10. And again, I would be, I'd expect Jack Crowley to start in the Six Nations. I thought he did excellently. But I'd love him to have the same prep time leading into his start as Sam Prendergast had. So I would stick with Sam. I'd have Crowley coming off the bench. And then for the next game, I would flip it, you know what I mean, and see how...
For the Wales match,
yeah, but it's 2 weeks away, you see. So Jack would have a half next week, and then they break up and then they have a full week at it. That's just how I think it could go, but in general, it'll be quite settled. Like, Mac Hansen and James Lowe came back from injury, but both had big games. Gary Ringrose was exceptional. You know, at some stage, Robbie Henshaw's going to start and probably Gary's going to drop out. But the fact that we're so settled and we have so many players fit... is testament to the Irish S&C system and medical team, and only really Tyke Furlong and Joe McCarthy are two that you would say would be in the Matchday 23 that are unavailable.
No need for tinkering against Scotland. As Wales, considering the situation Wales find themselves in now, and that's a conversation for another day, the whole disastrous kind of situation Welsh rugby is in at the moment, that's the match where you might kind of make the couple of tweaks that you're referring to. So in terms of the fixture list, it's working out somewhat well that it's Scotland away now, hopefully get two wins from two.
Yeah.
Then you can tinker against Wales before a big one against France.
Yeah, exactly. And also you have that weekend off as well, which, you know, may bring Furlong and McCarthy back in. But as I said, it gives the players you were going to change an extra 3 or 4 days prep. So they would have a half week and then a full week. Mm. And then, you know, they should have perfect preparation to be able to show what they can do. And reinvigorating, keeping the squad happy is something that Farrell was all very good at, and I'd imagine Easterby would be the same.
Okay. Dan Sheehan mentioned it was a bit hit and miss at times against England, hoping to go full metal jacket against Scotland. So in terms of approach, anything catch your eye and what we might see different on Sunday?
We struggled to get out of our own half for that first 20 minutes. So our kicking game wasn't anywhere near as accurate or as long as we would like. So we allowed England to come back at us. We lost a couple of key aerial battles, which the game is now, it's such a big part of the game. So there's 3 or 4 fixes. I think the positives were our line out 23 from 23. We didn't panic. We played with more width than normal. We got ball to the edges regularly and gave our flair players a chance to have some mismatches. And we were quite comfortable until the last 4 or 5 minutes when England got 2 tries. So in general, I thought we defended pretty well. And I know Dan mentioned there that there was a lot to work on. But overall, I think we have to respect that England came with a plan. England have some good players. And it just took us a little bit of a while to weather that storm.
OK, let's hear from the Scottish camp, Scotland scrum coach Peter de Villiers.
Yeah, I think they've become quite an aggressive scrummaging side recently. You know, they've in the past were always technically very sound and had a great platform, and they've evolved now to become keep that and even be more attacking. So it's a good challenge for us to go and play Ireland. They've got world class props. The conversion from Porter from tight head to loose head has like paid off for them over time. You know, I think he's really going into that position and has become explosive and a strong scrummager. They've built some good depth in that department as well. So, yes, it's an exciting challenge for us.
It's 10 defeats in a row to Ireland. You've not been involved for all of them. But what does Scotland need to do this weekend that they haven't done previously?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing that's very positive is we've consistently grown against them. You know, when you play one of these top teams and they're ranked higher than you, it's always going to take time to go and construct that win. You know, you have to grow as a team, and that growth sometimes come over time, you know, believing in it and making sure for 80 minutes you get everything in every department right, because that is what Ireland tend to do, as they are very consistent in all different areas of play. So that firstly is going to be important, and then secondly is the belief, you know, going out there and really believing that we're going to go and do it. And I think the players are all in a good place with regards to that.
An aggressive scrummaging side, would you agree? Do we have the upper hand up top, Bernard?
Yeah, we have, and that certainly was a key factor in us winning last year, particularly when replacements had to be made. So I think our bench in terms of front row is far superior to theirs. So it may take us a while to grind them down. I think, he's 100% right. I mean, Ireland used to be a team under Greg Feek when he was the scrum coach where it was all about quality delivery. It was all about nice pitches for the referee. It was all about not giving away penalties. We've seen that shift. We've seen it with Leinster under Robin McBride, and now we're seeing a little bit of it with Ireland. I think less so. I think Fogarty's more patient than Leinster tend to be. But it is a scrum that can, if they get on the right side of the referee, can win penalties, and obviously Scotland are aware of that.
Okay, so you're siding with an Irish victory, would I be right in saying
that?
Yeah,
100%. 100%.
Okay. Well, listen, before we let you go, Bernard, some team news is in. We will get the Irish team news tomorrow morning. However, England have united Finn Smith and Marcus Smith in their starting backline for the first time as they look to reignite their campaign at Twickenham. What do you make of that?
Yeah, it's a huge call, Shane. I mean, Marcus Smith has been very good for England, and so much of their attack has revolved around him. The unfortunate thing is it doesn't seem to be joined up, so he can create magic, but everyone else doesn't seem to be on the same page. Finn Smith is more of a controlling 10 with the ability to unlock things, and obviously you have Marcus Smith in the backfield as a fullback, still looking to give you a two-sided attack, a second receiver, but also counter-attacking back. So I think that's a positive. England's defence isn't good enough to try and park the bus against France, so they need to fire a few shots, and I think this is an effort to do that. He's changed up the back row as well, with Tom Willis coming in at number 8 and Ben Curry dropping out, which is obviously a bit of a change from last week where he went to 3-7s. But you're looking at the French team, and you know Damien Penaud is back from injury, and obviously with Intermac being suspended for the head high shot last week on Ben Thomas, they've gone for Mathieu Jalibert, who's had a difficult time in the French jersey in the past, and there was all rumors.
Did he returned to Bordeaux because he didn't.
He wasn't
want to act as a backup to Ramos.
Yeah, he basically felt it was a slight. But the French are like this. I mean, you know, what scene
disharmony
has been
in the French camp, Bernard? Well, never.
No. But in fairness, they don't see it. They see it. They, like, what's the reward for descent straight back into the team when when there's someone out? But in fairness to him, he's come out honestly and spoke about not being in a great place mentally. Wasn't happy that he was in his best place. In his head to go and play well for France, so he stepped away, and Galtier has forgiven him. He is a very talented young player and has been a big part of a very successful and dangerous attacking side of Bordeaux this year. So look, he's in there. Obviously, he's in there with some talent around him. Bia Barry, who plays in Bordeaux with him, and Damien Penaud, who plays in Bordeaux with him. I mean, they're just getting some amount of scores and tries, and a lot of from either his passing or kicking game. So this is a good French team, and on paper you would say they go to Twickenham and win.
Okay. Unfortunately, we've ran out of roads to go, but an Irish victory, a French victory,
and an Italian victory.
So 2 away wins and a home victory. Bernard Jackman, thank you very much. Safe travels to Scotland. We're taking a short break, then we're crossing live to Anfield to Fergal Brennan.
Game on.
Football.
Now, Fergal Brennan joins us live from Anfield ahead of the League Cup semi-final second leg this evening. Just to update you on the ongoing Eurobasket qualifier, the Irish women are trailing France 60 points to 12 now. So tough going away to France at the moment for the Irish women's team. But Fergal, as I mentioned, League Cup semi-final action at Anfield. Liverpool looking to overturn a one-goal deficit. Would they be hopeful in achieving that goal?
Yeah, I think based on home form this season, they've been absolutely fantastic here. Obviously, just the one misstep against Nottingham Forest going away back to the start of the campaign. And the result at Tottenham, I think even from a Liverpool perspective, that was a little bit unexpected, given the fact that Tottenham are still so inconsistent. But Tottenham got their chance late on, Lucas Bergvall with a goal, and that's given them the advantage going into this game at home. Cliched as it is always still Liverpool, massive favourites to go on and win the game and qualify for the final to take on Newcastle. But Tottenham have got an opportunity here. There's a real weight on Postecoglou's shoulders, on the players' shoulders, the long, long wait that Tottenham fans have had to reach a final and to win a trophy. They've got a really good opportunity here. That will be the message from Postecoglou going into this game. He knows the pressure that he's under. Arne Slot, obviously Liverpool are fighting across four fronts for the rest of the campaign, but he knows in reality this is bottom of the list in terms of priority. So the onus is on Tottenham to seize this opportunity, get a result here, and then in the final, I think they're very equally matched with Newcastle.
No official team news in just yet. We probably won't see Quevin Keller, but we will see Conor Bradley from an Irish point of view.
Yeah, that's the expectation. Trent Alexander-Arnold missing, unlikely probably to play against Plymouth in the FA Cup at the weekend. So Conor Bradley will start. Obviously, we're used to seeing Kelleher start League Cup games. But generally speaking, Alisson, even under Jurgen Klopp, sometimes for semi-finals, even be it League Cup or be it FA Cup, Alisson would get rotated in. That is the anticipation for tonight. Postecoglou and Klopp playing their cards quite close to their chest. We're all sitting here waiting for the team sheets to come in. So they haven't actually dropped until bang on 7 o'clock. But Alisson to start, Conor Bradley to start would be very much expected.
Okay, perhaps we might see Quivín on Sunday against Plymouth in the FA Cup, who knows. Credit to Laura Lee Davis, part of our production team here, furnishing me with this bit of information. Spurs record at Anfield since 1999. 27 games, 1 win, 7 draws, 19 losses. So no pressure for Spurs, Fergal.
No, and as I say, this is their opportunity. They're not going to win the Premier League. Obviously, they're still in a good position in the Europa League as well to push for a trophy. But there's the real sense tonight that they just need to get through a storm at Anfield, because I really think the final could be a really open game, because Newcastle did really well last night. But I just don't think there's a massive gap between Newcastle and Tottenham. And it'd be very interesting from a lot of neutrals' perspective to see two teams that were not used to battling out four trophies at Wembley. And Postecoglou needs a break. I honestly think his future could hinge on tonight. Maybe not immediately, but if Spurs were to be knocked out tonight and obviously the inconsistency in the Premier League continues, then that could be the end of him before the end of the season.
Okay, we shall see. We're going to have to leave the conversation there. Fergal Brennan, thank you so much. Big thanks to Ronan Lawler, Laura Lee Davis working on this evening's show. Bede de Silva is up next with the new music show. Game On is back from 6 o'clock tomorrow, but first we're going to check in with the news desk.